Attention, pleasure seekers. What if I told you there was a toy that was so iconic that it practically set the standard for all my favorite products? Allow me to introduce or reintroduce to you the Magic Wand. Dubbed the Cadillac of Vibrators, the Magic Wand is more than just a toy. It's a culture icon, a symbol of power and unapologetic pleasure. I mean, do you know any other toys that have been praised in Time magazine? Didn't think so. With a unique rumble that resonates deep within, the Magic Wand Original is not just a product, it's a trusted confidant. And it's a sure thing. Never had an orgasm? Try a magic wand. Never given your party a full body massage? Try the magic wand. Listen, it's rightfully earned accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades. I've been so obsessed with my magic wand, I even drilled holes in my bedside table so that she's always next to me in case I need her. Well, that was years ago. Because now there are multiple iterations of the magic wand, allowing you to pick whatever model fits your lifestyle. You can go wireless with the magic wand rechargeable, tiny with the magic wand mini, or micro. Micro's really mini. Or go for variety with the Magic Wand Plush. The best part though, all of them have the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original so popular. So if you're ready to make some magic, visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to cast a spell on the world. Magic Wand, not just a vibrator, an icon of pleasure. Okay, real talk. We all have embarrassing moments in the bedroom, you know, like gas, bloating, indigestion, and more. And I hear from so many of you with stomach issues, and it's keeping you from the pleasure you so rightly deserve. Well, I got some great news. While studies show that gut issues directly impact our arousal, erections, and overall sexual health, I got a game changer for your overall wellness. Introducing Just Thrive Probiotic. It is my secret weapon for overall health and the fuel for my sex life. Just Thrive Probiotic isn't just any ordinary probiotic. It is a clinically proven game changer, a gut superhero designed to up-level your passion and sex life. So no more embarrassing moments, only a life of gut-powered ecstasy. That sounds good, right? It's the first probiotic formulated with four ancestral survival strains, clinically guaranteed to reach your gut 100% alive. This probiotic is like your personal gut gardener, maintaining the health of your gut by eliminating bad bacteria that causes all those digestive issues and replenishing the good, making it a game changer for your digestion, your immune system, your skin, and even your mood. With Just Thrive, you'll nourish your gut microbiome, fueling your mind, body, and soul. So say hello to increased libido, enhanced pleasure, and a whole new level of satisfaction. Oh, don't miss my episode, Why Gut Health is Sexy with Tina Anderson, where you can learn more about this groundbreaking company. For a limited time, you can try Just Thrive 100% risk-free by visiting justthrivehealth.com and enter promo code SEXWITHEMILY at checkout to save 20% off on a 90-day bottle of Just Thrive probiotic. So take charge of your gut health, take charge of your sex life, and live your healthiest life yet with Just Thrive. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. On today's show, I'm joined by Tao Ruspoli, writer and director of Monogamish, a feature film that explores what monogamy means or doesn't mean in today's world. We talk about the psychology of love and marriage and why there's more awareness today on the ever-changing landscapes of intimate relationships. It's really time to talk to our partners about what kind of relationships we actually want versus the kind we're expected to have. We talk about feeling comfortable having these actual conversations and being more free about our desires and choices. I so enjoyed learning about Tao's journey and having him weigh in on a few of your questions as well. This was an insightful discussion. I know you'll enjoy the episode. Thanks for listening.
Into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily, you got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's
got
to have her standards. Oh, my.
Do women know about shrinkage?
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God, it feels so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, go to sexwithemily.com. You can easily subscribe to the podcasts. You know, we do two a week. We never want you to miss them. So when you subscribe, it's really easy to get them all. Never miss them. And subscribe to our newsletter, because I know you all love newsletters. I was at a party the other night and this woman was like, nice to meet you, nice to meet you. And she said, oh, I get your emails. And I was like, how? How did you get on my list? Because you guys know I don't give away your email address. And she's like, I don't know. And I was like, what's this sex with Emily? And then she's like, I almost deleted it. And then it was really good. I'm like, it is pretty interesting, right? So if you guys can't always listen, we link to all of our great blogs and all of our shows for the week. So I think you'll enjoy that. And as always, follow me on social media because that's a good time. Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, and Twitter. It's all at Sex with Emily. So this month, it's October, and I know that we're all, you know, excited for Halloween, and everyone tends to kind of revolve a lot around Halloween and dressing up and being sexy and all that. Well, here, we want to give you some sexy trick or treats, but first, we have to hear from you. Okay, here's our contest this month. We're going to give you, of course, some amazing, amazing products, toys, things that you're going to love, but I want to hear from you. I want to know your best sexy tricks. So, like, is there one sex tip that like works for you every time, or one move, or like maybe it's your favorite tip that you've learned, trick, or is there a sexy treat like accoutrements? Like, what do you have? Do you have like a great lube or toy or a product that you like that changed your life? We want to know. If you email me feedback@sexwithemily.com and put Halloween in the title by November 1st, you could win. That's what you got to do. I love you all. So thank you very much for entering. And now to the show. I'm very excited for my guest. I have Tao Ruspoli is here, and he is a talented filmmaker, and he has created fiction and documentaries, and most recently, he has a film that's coming out this right now, today, in New York.
October 13th,
October 13th, yep. It's called Monogamish, and we're going to get all into that, but first, I'm excited to talk to him about his personal journey making the film Monogamish. And so, welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much.
I'm so glad you're here. And so, you made this film recovering from a heartbreak,
yeah,
a divorce,
yeah,
and you wanted to explore the notion and the relationship between desire and marriage, and set out to kind of talk to your family and scholars and people you know about relationships.
It started, I was in the divorced part of my breakup after being married almost more than 8 years. I had a neighbor named Roberta, and she was a 75-year-old woman who had a little like blue hair, and she had a 40-year-old boyfriend and just loved to talk wildly about sex and relationships. And she was just an incredible character. And I was having trouble sleeping at night, and at like 4 a.m, I'd wake up and I'd see her window with the light was on. So I'd call her up and say, what are you doing, Roberta? She's like, yeah, come over and have breakfast. And we'd start chatting, and I made a short film about her. I called it The Love Project. And it was a 10-minute film. And she's 75 years old. She's talking about her pussy. She's talking about, I mean, she's just like completely.
I loved her in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's favorite.
She's incredible. And she's so frank and insightful and hilarious. And I showed the film, you know, it did really well on YouTube. And then I showed it to Oliver Stone, who's like been a mentor to me. And he's like, this is fantastic. So I realized maybe I should turn this into a larger project. It started and was all the way through a form of therapy in a way, like trying to figure out like, what happened? Why is there this disconnect between the ideal of monogamy and the ideal of marriage and the reality, which is that so many marriages end in divorce and relationships are constantly changing and ending. And there seemed to be a disconnect between the ideal and the reality, as there always is,
yes,
in all ideals. But at first, part of me was worried about the idea of a film about relationships seemed a little soft or mushy in a mm-hmm. way. Like, you know, I went to Berkeley, I studied philosophy. My previous film was about Heidegger, the German philosopher, mm-hmm. kind of heady stuff. So the idea of like doing something about relationships, I didn't know if it was like intellectually rigorous or stimulating enough. And boy, was I wrong. Like,
oh,
I
yeah.
realized so quickly that you can attack this issue from so many angles, and each one you could write a PhD thesis
Absolutely.
About. Whether it's historically, anthropologically, legally, economically, politically, religiously, and each of these huge kind of categories of the way we organize our societies inform this thing that we call marriage, this institution, which, as one of the lawyers said that I interviewed, said, you know, it's the most important contract you'll sign in your life. And most people read it less carefully than they read their cell phone contract.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I'm still getting through my cell phone contract. But I understand what you're saying, that it is so, this is why I love that you really tackled this. First of all, as a documentary filmmaker in the past, I don't even, you're right, with all those things, you could have gone in so many different directions with this, because the institution of marriage, you know, is very confusing and flawed. I think that we see marriage as the only option. That's truly what society holds up, really, is that you get married till death do us part. And then, you know, but then looking back at the history of it, I was going to say that I actually started my show 12 years ago because similarly, I wasn't going through heartache, but I never had desired marriage. I never thought that it seemed like, I'm like, why is everyone jumping into this institution that is so flawed? Half of the marriages end in divorce or whatever they say it is. People kind of dispute me on that, but you know, no one seems that happy. And I did know people in alternative relationships and I just wanted to know more. And then also coupled with the fact that I wanted to learn how to have best sex because everyone's always saying that amazing sex. And I thought that seems like a worthwhile endeavor to learn that. So that's where I started too, on that journey to kind of get some answers. And then I kept going to get a degree and all that. But with you moving into this, I can't imagine that you, when you were shooting, so it took you 5 years, you said, to make it?
Yeah, so I when I decided to turn this into a longer film, I had been reading Dan Savage since I was a freshman in college.
Right.
And was always a huge fan. Like, I just would, as soon as the weekly paper would come out up in Berkeley. Like,
yeah, the Bay Guardian.
Yeah, exactly.
I read it too. Or the Weekly? Was it in the Weekly or the Guardian? I used to read it every week
too.
Bay,
the East Bay Express was called. I was a huge fan and I would always like, as soon as the issue came out, I couldn't wait to, and it was much more marginal at the time. Like it was called Hey Faggot.
Yeah.
And,
Hey Faggot, Dear Faggot. Yeah.
And he was like very, you know, sassy and irreverent and I just ate it up always. And so I kind of very naively and openly wrote him a letter saying, hey, I've been reading you since college and I've just gone through this experience and I'm thinking of making a movie and I want to call it Monogamish and you should be in it. And, you know, I got like an email like 6 months later from his agent saying, you know, sorry, Dan is too busy. And like, you know, I was only a little discouraged, but I just kept at it. And I started diving deeply into this subject and meeting all these like luminaries yeah. who have such interesting things to say about it. Well, from Christopher Ryan, who wrote Sex at Dawn, to Esther Perel. And just so the movie started to get its own momentum, as these things do. You said it earlier that it's a bit like giving birth, and yes. It is in the sense that also it has a life of its own. And soon enough, it started to make more sense for Dan to be in it, not just for me, but for him also.
Yeah, monogamish. He coined the term so many other things. I love that you actually wrote letters to him in the middle of your marriage that you never sent. That was part of your, didn't you say that to him? You're like,
Exactly. I'd been writing these letters. I mean, I kind of adapted these thoughts that I'd been having throughout my relationship into questions for him, as if I'd been writing to him for the last 15 years. And so he finally agreed to come to my house in LA, and we had this like amazingly thoughtful, in-depth discussion for 2 hours, and it became the backbone of the film.
You use that kind of as the narrative. Yeah, I thought, you did a really great job with that. So I'm curious, when you started out with the movie, because you said it was cathartic, I'm sure. Pie still is.
Absolutely.
You said you didn't. Did you go to therapy or did you just choose to make the film?
I did a little bit of therapy, okay. But I think the film was the most worthwhile therapy.
I'm sure. So what did you think you were going to learn versus what you actually learned?
Well, I didn't know anything about like alternative relationship models.
Right.
And like, I mean, a little bit from reading like, you know, here and there. And the interesting thing is how much the society has changed even in the 5 years since I started working on the film. So in 2011, when I started making it, the only people I could find who were like advocates of, you know, alternatives to monogamy were like pierced, tattooed, BDSM, you know, very like fringe cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And as it was subtle but persistent change that happened throughout the 5 years of working on it, where more and more quote unquote normal people were embracing the fact that there are a million ways to organize a relationship,
right.
Especially when you take away some of, or examine a little bit more closely a lot of the unspoken assumptions that feed into like the traditional family model,
exactly.
Which are steeped in religion and patriarchy. And
so let's talk about those unspoken agreements that are involved in traditional marriage. I know there's a lot there to unpack.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people think of marriage as a romantic institution, and really it's an institution that was born, I think, to bring together families, which is not a bad thing, you know, but it was a very strategic institution for forming alliances. This is from the lower to the upper classes. But what was interesting for me is that I have an old family in Italy that goes back 1,000 years. So I was able to take the historical and turn it into the personal and go back to visit my family in Italy and look at, you know, how marriage had affected my own background. And, you know, marriages were made to consolidate power. And very much women were used as pawns in a game to, you know, trade, to bring together money and power. And the church was intimately involved too. My father was a prince and got his title from the Pope, that, you know, back in the 1700s. And then my father rebelled very strongly against his background. He was born in 1924. His mother died when he was 9 years old. His father was very militaristic, fighting with, you know, under Mussolini in World War II. And he was disgusted by all of that and started to rebel early on in the 1930s already and 40s, and lived a famously kind of promiscuous
wild life. So you knew this growing up?
Absolutely.
In Italy, you grew up in Italy too?
Yeah. Well, when I was born, my dad was 50. My mom was 18.
I love your story. I love that you do weave your personal story. So that's just such an amazing part of the film too. People see it.
Like, yeah. And again,
I was like, what? Wait. And it kept going like 18 and 50. And then there was like kids, and then they had kids, and your grandfather had a kid. I mean, it was, yes.
My grandfather was on my mother's side, was a spaghetti Western star, was in like over 200 films, went to Italy. He was an American actor. And then he was friends with my father and with Roman Polanski, which is where my parents met, like at his house. And
makes sense.
Yeah. there were different times.
Right.
But obviously, yeah, I grew up in a very non-traditional family.
Right.
But what's interesting as a documentary filmmaker is that the more specific you get and more seemingly idiosyncratic things can seem, I think the more universal the insights are. If you try and like speak in generalities, it becomes cliche, it becomes platitudes. And I found that just looking at my specific situation with my specific marriage and my specific weird family history, both on the traditional long term of the 1,000-year history and my parents and their wild ways, I was able to uncover some deeper truths about the culture at large. And
about the culture, about Italian culture, about your,
I think Western culture and what we're going through. That what's most important maybe is that to understand is everyone assumes that the way things are when they're around is natural and the way it's always been and the way it should be and the way it always will be. And really, you just have to take a little step back to see that these issues are changing constantly. I mean, look at the difference between the 1950s and the 1960s and the 1980s and today. And so we mustn't take for granted that the way we structure our relationships and our sexuality and our institutions of marriage is the only way to do it.
Right. And I think that that's what is changing. And I would agree that in the last 5 years, even, you know, I've known a lot of people in alternative relationships that, and people, I fight with people are like, my friends are like, come on, they have ponytails or tattoos. And I'm like, no, there's actually probably your neighbors are in an alternative relationship and you don't know. And I think that people are getting more open about it now. And we are starting to see a little bit more role models perhaps in those places, but not enough. And so people are still getting married thinking like, till death do us part, I'm still going to be with one person. And they don't even know that there's other options and that there's things. And what I always talk about on the show and what I think will really spark a lot of conversations in a lot of homes after they see this or a lot of minds is that, wow, well, maybe I have other options. And maybe before I decide to get married till death do us part, that I'm never going to be with someone else, I'll just talk to my partner about this and say, how do you picture marriage? You know, I always thought it might be challenging to be with one person, or how do we do if things come up sexually, or maybe we don't want to live together. Do we want kids? And people don't even talk about if they want kids before marriage, like let alone like what's the construct of the marriage. So I think that you really showed, and I love how you have that couple that's like this couple that looks like they could, you know, be your neighbors or your friends. And they're like, oh, but we're, you know, we're happy. We met 10 years ago, 8 years ago, and now we've opened up our relationship, or they opened it up a few years ago, 8 years in.
Yeah.
This nice couple with kids, and you're just not expecting that. So it's like, oh, and so that's what I'm hoping too, by having this conversation with you and your movie and my show too, that people, there are ways that you can, not that it's going to be, but I'm not saying that an alternative relationship is the answer for everybody.
No,
either.
If there was one way.
And it's all challenging. Like relationships are hard. Like they're just, I have challenges with my family and my friends and stuff. We work through it with communication, but just know that there's other options.
If there was one way to do this, that was the right way, someone would have figured it out a lot before us, and everyone would be doing that.
Right.
So there's clearly not one answer. My humble hope with the movie is to say, like, let's have a conversation without shame. And let's, and what struck me, what I learned most is, A, it's always changing in the culture. It's always changing in individual relationships. You know, like, none of the people who I talk to are in the same place now that they were when I talked to them. It was right. like really a moving target to try mm-hmm. and even tell one story, because it's the evolution is so constant in people's relationships.
So from what you've learned, though, let's say people moving into a relationship right now, how do you think this conversation goes if they're listening to this and they're thinking, I might not want that traditional, like, how would you even bring it up? Because people are so afraid that they're going to be, well, what if my partner then doesn't want to be with me because he thinks I want to sleep with
that's what
people.
That's what I wanted to say before. Is that
I read your mind.
People, what the biggest surprise for me was how much variety there was in what people were okay with and not okay with.
Yeah.
And I was amazed when I talked to, you know, this. I did hundreds of interviews of people who didn't even end up in the movie, obviously, because you can only do so much in 90 minutes. But I remember this woman seemed very conservative, you know, middle-class woman, and she said, I would much rather my husband have a loving sexual relationship with somebody else than catch him like masturbating to his computer screen.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? She's like, yeah, because that's degrading to him and it's objectifying the women on the screen. And, you know, so there, and then there's somebody else who says, my husband has had lovers and I'm super grateful to them because right. they provided something that I wasn't able to provide. And I'm happy that that happened, but I don't want other people knowing about it.
Right, exactly. And well, people are very private too about this because they don't want shame. They don't want people judging. Yeah. People aren't as open to be like, oh, and here's my wife, you know, their company dinner and we're in an alternative relationship last week and we had a threesome. People don't.
No, people, I know people that. Who are also like on the surface, very liberal. And yet they can't tell people in their own family who are also very liberal that they're in an open marriage. And that they're allowed to do these things because they're worried that of the shame or the judgment that will come with that. So these issues, it's so much where the personal meets the political and the wider issues. And this was also a struggle in making the movie because, like, I made a cut. I thought the movie was done, and I showed it to my mom, who's, you know, supposed to be your biggest fan, and she's like, "It's a disaster," and I'm like, "Why?" And she's like, "It's too cold." It was like I'd made a really academic film,
right?
And she's like, "You can't make an academic film about the matters of the heart, which are like the things that most
touches mom, the most." Right? Good for you, mom. So, did you have to tear it apart?
Yeah, and I started with saying, "Okay, let me interview you, mom," and so now she's in the movie.
I know, I love it. That's great, though. I love that you have the because I felt like it was personal and that you really opened up. And
yeah, you know. It's you know, it was a very delicate balance to try and find between like being vulnerable and being real and authentic and really like looking deep inside myself and in a way that wasn't obviously you don't want to become narcissistic or right. overshare or, you know, become.
That's also a fine line too.
Exactly.
You know, so especially being someone who's heady, a philosopher, say you're thinking, you know, philosophy major, whatever you've studied yeah. has been very like, and you even doubted that this could be some kind of intellectual construct. But the whole thing about being in your body and being vulnerable, was that new for you to really start experiencing these emotions? Or have you always been kind of privately, emotionally in touch with yourself?
No, I mean, the challenge was to find the balance between the emotional and the intellectual in this, like the head and the heart. And I think that after 5 years of working on it, massaging it and talking to people and editing and re-editing and, you know, showing it to people. And finally, we've come up with a result that people are really responding yeah. to. And what's interesting is as much as watching the movie is the conversation that it inspires afterwards,
exactly.
both like in the Q&As that we're going to be having after every screening.
I love you're going to be at the Q&As.
Yeah. As well as a lot of the people in the movie, we're going to be doing panel discussions after every film. And if, you know, we will be going to other places around the country. And we have a website, which is monogamishmovie.com, and people can see where the screenings are going to be and Great. Who's going to be at the discussions.
I love it. Like so that. Check that out, monogamishmovie.com. This is also going to be on our website as well, but in New York and in the Bay Area, we know.
Yeah.
But, and you had some of my favorites in the film, like Esther Perel, when she wrote Waiting in Captivity, how many years ago? Like 10 or 12 years ago when that came out. It really was groundbreaking. She talks a lot about that we want the passion and the aliveness and the spontaneity and all that newness in a partner, but then we also want like security, dependability, and all those things sort of cancel each other out when it comes to like keeping the erotic connection alive. And how do we reconcile that? And she actually has a new book coming out as well. And I understand all of her work, but the thing with it, you read it, you're like, yeah, but now what? Like, I understand this is a problem that we want one person to be all these things to us, like our passionate lover and our best friend. And like, that's not really possible? You know, how does that really happen? And she says in the film that that's, it's not a problem to solve. It's a paradox that we manage. Yeah. And I thought that was a really strong
quote.
That could
be the tagline of the film.
I think so too. And that's the thing, like, you're not preaching. It's not like you're saying that go out and everyone should have it, but just have a open relationship or a monogamous relationship, but know that there's options and know that there's discussions you want to have with yourself and maybe a partner and eventually a partner about what really works for you.
We do have options these days and there are people out there. Like, now I'm openly open, you know, after like being, you know, monogamously married for nearly 10 years and then in another long monogamous relationship after that. And what's been most heartening is that if you're truly honest about what you want, then you will find that's a big world. There's other people out there.
That was my, you're in an open relationship now.
I'm in several, yeah.
Okay, right. So you have, do you have a primary partner?
I don't, okay. No. Because so I came out of like
you're
long.
Dating, then.
Except the difference is if you have this kind of philosophy of polyamory and openness, instead of the dating being like, oh, this isn't serious, I'm just like auditioning people. And then if it doesn't work out, you know, move on to the next person because you're not the one. I find that it's possible to have multiple loving relationships that are that build on in time. The other thing that struck me a lot is the friendships that can come out of sharing a lover mm-hmm. with somebody. So I've had deeper like male friendships now through sharing.
Having a threesome experience or having just
dating the same person and being very open about it. And the first time I experienced that, it was amazing. Like I was with somebody who was married and her husband called me and said, hey, let's have lunch. And I was like, okay. And and then we became like best friends.
It's true. And it's
Two people who love the same person. If you take away that element of competition or of ownership, suddenly it opens up the space that for them to find that you have something a lot in common. And it's also happened with women that I've been with who, like, if I'm being super open about dating more than one person and then hanging out with them together and then finding that they can be great friends because they have something in common now.
Exactly.
It's a different model, like non-monogamy. I don't think it's for everybody because if it makes you want to vomit, the idea of like your partner or somebody that you're sleeping with somebody else, and you just like have to say, okay, I'm going to stomach this because they want it. That's not going to work.
Would this have made you vomit when you were married?
No, I've always been, okay. I've always been kind of naturally transgressive and not naturally jealous.
Right.
So okay. I think I've always like been the type of person who this could work for, but, only now through making the movie and through meeting all these amazing people, mm-hmm. both because I interview like regular couples as well as like, you know, the Diana Adams, she's a lawyer who only like helps people in non-traditional relationships and protect their legal mm-hmm. interests, whether they're in, you know, polyamorous or LGBTQ or anything like that. So meeting all these intelligent, interesting people who are navigating these waters successfully inspired me to kind of try a different way.
So when you start meeting women right now and you're dating, so right away you'll say like, hey, so I'm in an open relationship or I'm not looking for commitment right now, but...
No, I am looking for a commitment, though.
A commitment.
That's the difference.
I'm not looking for monogamy right now.
Right, exactly.
So I'm dating people.
Exactly.
And they're pretty cool with that. And if they're not...
It's amazing how many people are totally intrigued and say, oh, that sounds really cool. Like, I've been curious about that, or I've been.
Yeah, I think people are more curious and open to it. I think at least people are more open to it now. And
some people are still
so
appalled,
crazy.
Of course.
Of course. And there will always be. It's great.
Get that out of the way right away.
Exactly. We're just saying that I guess I'm trying on this show, and I've had, you know, a lot of guests over the years just to kind of shed light on that. There's just other options. So for you, you've never dealt with jealousy, you said. Never been an issue for you.
No,
jealous.
Right. Everyone's
you've
been
jealous. But is that your main, like, it doesn't. You can.
I think the way you respond to jealousy is important.
Right.
And like, you know, if a kid is jealous of their brother, you don't blame the brother, right? You say to the kid, like, you've got to deal with this and make them understand why they don't need to kind of nurture that feeling, right? Like, but for some reason, somebody is jealous that a coworker got a promotion. That's something that the person who's jealous should deal with, right? Not the person who got the promotion.
Right, because we're looking at someone else as a mirror. Usually it's onto our own insecurities.
I think that when people in open relationships experience jealousy, which happens, they should, you know, own the feeling and then decide what to do with it. And often it's just a passing feeling.
It is passing and you can transcend it. That's the thing that I know people in open relationships, they practice like rigorous honesty. And I think that that's, it's not that it doesn't still happen after years, but you just kind of can move through it. Well, a lot of people are in monogamous relationships, experience jealousy, or they're still, they're suffering through certain things, but they never talk about it. So, I mean, not that they don't talk about it. I'm just saying there's challenges on both sides, but people get jealous anywhere. You can get jealous because your partner didn't came home late and, you know, in a monogamous relationship, but just learning how to know that, like, jealousy is just like fear or anxiety or, you know, sadness. It's all something that you can actually, you don't have to like run from.
Insecurity.
I think insecurity. Well, yeah. Well, that's like the root of so many things. So now in open relationships, do you feel that the women you're with experience jealousy and how do you handle that?
Again, I think our imagination is our, it's going to be our worst enemy. And often, like, I find people are more jealous of the unknown. And the moment people meet each other and realize everyone's human and has great qualities and also flaws, that's the most exciting thing for me as far as, like, the difference between just being a guy who's dating, who's, like, again, pretending each girl might be the next wife, versus saying, like, we're trying a different way, which is openness and honesty and therefore and community in a way.
You know, it is like, community. It's community.
And, and so, and then the other thing is I found that people I've been with, if it's not working out, you can easily transition into friendship.
If you do it right.
If you do it right and you've been honest all along. I have had lovers who have become, then found a happy monogamous relationship with somebody else. And now we're all friends and they'll come visit me together.
It's
and
amazing.
Like, and that is like, I think something that there are some, I don't want to prescribe in the movie, but I do want to, like, there's some things I learned that are for sure.
Yeah, what do you want? Like, let's talk about some of the main things that you learned, the takeaways.
I think honesty is the number one. And that doesn't mean like telling everybody everything. Like people can sometimes.
You decide.
Yeah, people can decide and can ask, you know, I want to know this, I don't want to know that. But without saying like one way is better than another, there are some ways that are better than others. Like, I think if you live in a culture where women are stoned to death for, you know, looking at a man or if people, you know, aren't allowed to have sex or think about sex before they get married, to me, that's just backwards. And so then you have a spectrum between that and just total, you know, loving relationships with multiple people. And then there's 1,000 places in between that are a gray area and people have to find what works for them. Again, I don't think you can shove these things down people's throats.
Right.
And I don't think open relationships are for everybody.
No, absolutely not. Right. But 100%. Just, and they could even be monogamous, but it could even give them an inspiration to kind of just talk about some of these things, about being honest about things, or maybe there's ways to, I don't know, experiment in the relationship, but still keep
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. I mean, so everything, like what happens when there's so many things within a relationship, even if it is ostensibly monogamous, whether it's, you know, going to a party and sitting separately and having, you know, flirtatious interactions with people, but you know there's a line that you're not going to cross, and yet you still get to bring home some of that energy.
Exactly. The NRE, the new relationship energy,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
That's what I think a lot of people crave. Wait, we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
Tao Rusbli, amazing talking to you. We're going to continue this conversation and you're going to help me answer some emails.
I'd love to.
From the listeners. Okay. And thank you everyone for listening to the show. Thank you for supporting my sponsors who help keep this show free. And I love you all. We'll be right back. Okay, I'm back with Tao Rusbli. I'm just love talking to you about this film. Monogamish, it's such a great term. Thank you, Dan Savage. Thank you for making this film. So I have a question about sex, because we don't talk about sex a lot in the movie, but I think there is a sort of underlying theme to all of this, is that it's just a lot of us want to have different sexual experiences and sex can kind of get stale in relationships. And so what, maybe it was left on the cutting room floor. So I'm curious, like, or what are some of the takeaways about people that you talk to or even that you've experienced in your own open relationships about sex, about it being maybe more expansive or about how it changes when people open it up? Is it what they think?
Well, I mean, there's no question that the people who are on the forefront of new relationship models are mostly people for whom sex is important. And what happens often, I found, in women especially, there's been such a history of shaming women for their sexuality. Yeah. It happened for hundreds of years or thousands of years. Women were seen as being overly sexual and therefore irrational and evil.
Hysteria, right.
Right? Everything. And then they tried a different tactic. It kind of suddenly changed to the opposite. Actually, women aren't supposed to be interested in sex. And if they are, there's something wrong with them, you know? But in any case, it's about shame surrounding women's sexuality. And what Christopher Ryan talks about in Sex at Dawn is that this came about primarily through economic and power dynamics where
this
attitude about women's sexuality. Because what happened is, if you look at tribes and cultures that don't have private property, women are as promiscuous and as into sex as men are. And now we know that women actually tire of monogamy more quickly than men do.
It's true.
Women want variety and love sex as much as men do. So what happened is that as soon as private property came about, men wanted to make sure that their property was going to pass on to their own children, and therefore they had to control the woman's sexuality, the wife's sexuality. Mm-hmm. And you found that there's a great historian and lawyer in the film called Eric Berkowitz, who wrote a history of sex and the law called Sex and Punishment. Okay. And he talks about how upper class women in Italy in the 1500s often were envious of prostitutes because they got to experience their sexuality and be free also, therefore, in other ways. They could talk to men, about other subjects more openly because they were able to open up this side of themselves. So many women's entire identity was controlled and dominated by this need to keep them in the home and not sleeping with anybody else. Right. So I think that the interesting thing that's happening now is that as women attain greater and greater equality, and obviously we have a long way to go still, but as you see women able to make their own living and not have to find a man to, be the only sustenance and the only way they can have a child and the only way they can have a roof over their heads, then you find women being able to express their sexual natures. And what's happening often in marriage is that women think, rather than admit they want variety, which the culture doesn't let them do, they shut down and say they're not interested in sex at all anymore. And then so many women I talk to, for example, who went into an open relationship after being in a closed one, said, "Oh, I thought that my sexuality was dead and I'd never be interested in sex, but it wasn't true. I just wasn't interested in sex with my partner."
Right, because I did something different.
And then as soon as they're able to have sex with somebody else, then it opens up that part of themselves again. And they realize how important it was, how much there was this thing missing in them. And then hopefully they can bring that energy home back to their relationship.
Exactly. No, that's fascinating. And I think a lot of people do that. They have gone into open relationships or they've had affairs even, which I don't recommend. But sometimes that can sort of you're like, oh, I am alive. I'm not dead down. A lot of women are sort of disconnected, men too, but they're disconnected from their body so much so that they are I no longer need sex. I've already had enough sex. And then yes, they have this awakening where that's actually not true anymore.
I mean, I know a woman who's been married for 30 years and she says, my husband loves me sleeping with other men because it keeps my libido alive.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, again, we're not saying this is the only recipe, but it is something to look at and to kind of bring that. If that's not interesting to you, is there a way that you can kind of bring that novelty into your relationship and to kind of work on it and focus on it, because sex is important. So that's the thing I, fight against with people, is that they're like, oh, it's really, why is it important? We're best friends. We're, but we're everything, but we don't have sex. But we need that sex. We crave that sex. And I think that for women, especially, they forget. They're like, well, I haven't had it for a while. I'm kind of shut down and I don't feel it. My body's not speaking to me that way. But I think, it's never gone forever.
No.
There's different ways, there's different paths. So how about you? Your sex life changed since you've been in this open place.
Oh, I mean,
more expressive. It's always been great, but now you just can be more.
No, it's a new exploration, and it allows for new experiences, and it happens to be exactly what I need right now in my life. Openness means openness to anything. I'm open to the idea of monogamy and marriage, and I think monogamy can be great.
Right.
Yeah.
It could still happen for you on this road. Absolutely. You might want it again. Who knows? But you don't have to decide.
I would never want to say I'm just only going to be open forever from now on, because that would be a form of closeness in a way, right?
Exactly. I agree with you. Yeah. Well, I love it. I love your film. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Monogamish, the movie. .com.
Monogamishmovie.com.
Monogamishmovie.com.
And then we also have a Facebook page, which is Monogamish Movie. And you can also find me, Tao Ruspoli, Ruspoli, on Instagram, Twitter, all of the things.
Okay, got it. We'll put all that out there too. We're going to answer some emails, but first I have questions for you. 5 questions.
Okay.
You got to answer them rapid fire.
Rapid fire. Okay.
Ready? What's your biggest turn on?
Oh my God, I have too many.
It's okay.
Intelligence mixed with adventurousness.
Okay, that's good. Biggest turn off?
Conformism.
Sexiest part of a partner's body or anyone's body?
I'd have to say the face. Yeah.
Okay. What's the one thing that you wish that you could tell? Or what's the one
eyes,
thing that you
want?
The eyes. What's the one thing you wish you could tell your current or all future partners about your body's needs?
Oh my
what
God.
Do they need
it's
to know?
Just a rapid fire, such complex and deep questions. Say it one more time.
Okay. So what's like the one thing that you wish you could tell when you have a new partner or a partner? You're like, God, I wish they knew this about my body. I'm sure now you're very open and tell them everything. But what's like, you got to know this first.
I think
it could be anything.
I think men are more like women than we realize, and women are more like men than we realize. So women are, unlike what the culture says that like, you know, women only want security and monogamy and all that. No, women want wild, untamed sexuality and newness. And men also require time and intimacy to get to know somebody before getting naked together. And when you do get naked, time to like actually connect with somebody. Yeah. I think that
intimacy,
that's...
Intimacy, breathing, looking each other. Yeah, that's
and,
good.
And so going slow and taking one's time. Yeah.
I love it. Taking your time. That's a good one. Huge fan of that. Okay, let's move into some emails.
Okay.
Help the people. If you have a question you want me to answer on the show, I love that. It's really easy. You can just text your question to 797979 and you text Ask Emily one word. It's really easy. Or you go to sexwithemily.com and you find on my website via the Ask Emily tab, you can ask your question. And as always, include your gender, your age, where you live, and how you listen to the show. Hi, Emily. I love being with my boyfriend. Things are starting to get serious and we can't keep our hands off each other. The sex is mind-blowing and we often go multiple rounds. He just recently opened up that he and his ex were swingers. I'm not bothered by what he was or wasn't, nor am I turned off. He says he's ready to fall in love, be monogamous, and that the swinger thing ruined his last relationship and made things messy. Will his last behavior be hard to break? Do you think I'll end up cheating if he commits to this relationship with me? I love listening to you at work. If only my coworkers knew why I was cracking up. Thank you, Emily. Misty 31, Modesto, California.
Wow.
Can a leopard change his spots? I want to say first, I can't tell you. I don't know your partner, and it sounds like you're just getting to know your partner. And the thing is, you know, maybe he did move through monogamy, you know, non-monogamy, and now he is really ready. But I would pay attention and also find out like what appealed to him about being in a non-monogamous relationship, because maybe those things still do appeal to him. But just because it got messy, you said here, he ended it because it got messy. Does he still crave those things? Maybe you're interested in those things. So I don't know if he's going to end up cheating on you, but I'd say right now you need to have these real talks about it without judgment, being open and hearing what that was like for him, why he craved that.
Yeah. And also, I think we have to remember there's a double standard. One of the problems with open relationships these days, when it's still kind of a minority, more slightly fringe thing, is that people use any failure in that to then judge the entire institution. So as soon as an open relationship ends, everybody says, you see, open relationships don't work.
Right.
Oh, look, this was messy. Then they don't say that about monogamous relationships. So that's just totally unfair. Like nobody says at the end of a monogamous relationship, see, monogamy doesn't work, or see, closed relationships don't work. So I would be wary of this kind of dismissive attitude of saying like, oh, it was messy, therefore, I mean, monogamous relationships are messy too.
Right. They're
all
messy.
It's all messy. So I think everybody should try push their limits a little bit. Obviously, you don't want to shove something down somebody's throat. But who knows? Maybe they can find some common ground that there can be some play with other people here and there. And she might discover something that's super exciting to her.
Exactly.
And I mean, another thing that we discover a lot, and a lot of the experts I talked to in the film pointed out, is that once you unleash a woman's sexuality, it actually can become quite scary to a man.
Yes.
Because there's a reason that they've felt the need to suppress it for so many centuries. Because, a woman is able to go on and on and on, for example. And a man, once he's done, is done often, right?
Yeah.
Unless you've practiced tantrism. And so often men have to be careful what they wish for, because they bring their, partners to the sex club. And then suddenly, like, the woman's...
Yeah.
Realizing that she's having the best time
and
he's like, oh my God.
It's so true. No.
What have I unleashed? So I think obviously I advocate for greater and greater conversations, and I hope that they can have that conversation and that both she and he can have an open mind about.
I think it's a great time for you guys, Misty, to have some really important conversations like all couples should in the relationship. Better start now. Another question. Hi, Emily. I've cheated on my boyfriend a handful of times. Once intercourse, once oral, and a few makeout sessions. I really care for him and love him. We've been together 7 years. He's just not very sexual, and I am. My boyfriend brings up my cheating all the time. The last time I cheated was about 2 years ago, but he chooses to still be with me. Last night, during some amazing sex, he started getting angry at me and stopped everything and fell asleep. Is this okay behavior? I know He's hurt, but I don't think it's healthy to bring it up all the time. Please help me with some advice, Erica, 24, Alberta, Canada.
I mean, this is just a prime example of showing how women are as interested in variety and sex as men are, and they're just as apt to want to have other experiences. And I just hope that there can be less and less shame around that. And I think Esther Perel has been talking about the positive side of when people cheat, like what comes out, what are they able to bring back to the relationship. And I think people should stop feeling so bad and be like, have their partners hold this against them for their entire relationship. The fact that they, you know,
there was a transgression.
Enjoyed their body with somebody else. Your body is your own. You know, when you get sick, you're the one who feels it. When you die, you're the one who's going to die. Like, I feel like if people have had other experiences with other people, yes, you should be honest. Yes, you should apologize if you've, you know, and change your ways if you're lying. But you should also, it shouldn't be like endless shame about the fact that like you felt like making out with somebody at one time.
Right. Well, the only problem, yes, and I agree with you, but the only problem here and the reason why it keeps coming up is because you guys have not done any repair around it. So when the trust is broken in a relationship, Erica, it's not just going to heal on its own because you said, I'm sorry. And you're like, why can't I get over it? We're having great sex. And typically this repair, I mean, listen, relationships are not about perfection. They're about repair. Like, how do you repair? How do you communicate? How do you move things forward and talk about what's going on? So of course he's still angry at you because it was hurtful. So I feel like, you know, he probably doesn't trust you and all these things. So I actually think the best way to do this is through therapy, because you probably need to bring, it's been a few years now and you've been together 7 since the cheating happened. It was 2 years ago. So I think that you're just not going to be able to do this on your own. So I would recommend, if you want to stay with him and you love him, that you should find a counselor to go to that can help you guys communicate. And a lot of times people recommend that you know, maybe he'll want to know more details about it that will help him. I mean, I don't know what he needs from you right now, but there's going to be some more conversations. And to go back to Esther Perel's new book, it's about, not that infidelity is a great thing, but there can be some benefits that come from it, because if couples are able to kind of communicate around it and find some kind of some kind of gems in there, that doesn't mean it has to tear the relationship apart. Hi, Emily. I've listened to your podcast since January and it's been really helpful for me. I just got in my first sexual relationship of 8 months and my libido is shot. Thinking of my previous girlfriend is the only way I can get turned on. I'm having difficulty moving forward because sex for her was casual and fun. I took it more seriously and wanted a lot. I now feel confused as far as what sex means to me. I was her first monogamous relationship. She had many partners before me and was typically open or poly. Do you have any relationship advice for a guy who just got out of his first sexual relationship and wants to move forward? Thank you, Chris, 28, California. So I get it that you're connected to your first sexual experience. So I think that you just have to give yourself some time to heal from it.
That's what
time heals all wounds. It really does. And so I think maybe you're being really hard on yourself. It's okay to still want to still think about your ex and get turned on. People do that all the time.
Absolutely. I think this guy just needs time, needs new experiences.
Yeah.
Of course, one of the most interesting things I find about being with more than one partner or having a new relationship is the different parts of you that are exposed when you're with different people.
Yeah,
you know, two people,
that's so true.
One person can feel like they're very dominant in one relationship and then suddenly they're very submissive in another. And then, you know, you can be more loving and affectionate sometimes and more, you know, brutal in others, let's say. And that's the beauty of the fact that we now live a life that has more distinct chapters, let's say. One of the other things in the film is we call a marriage failed when it's like ends after 10 years. And that's just a terrible way to see it. Like,
if you don't last forever, it's a failure.
Yeah. It's not just the way you think about a relationship theoretically. It has real world consequences, which is then how do you relate to the person after you've split up? Can you still be friends? Can you still acknowledge that you've had this amazing time together? Can you still be friends with each other's families and friends and people that have to, that otherwise you have to pick sides and think of it as this horrible ending? Yeah. So I think that being able to like acknowledge what you learned from this last relationship, incorporate that into who you are now going forward, and then allow yourself to become a new person or the next chapter of you in your next relationship and realize that that's going to happen. It's going to happen multiple times.
That's a great point to make, that when you're going through a breakup and you're ending a relationship, that is the best work you can do sometimes is right after, when you're alone for a while, no matter how long it takes you, Chris, But to spend that time figuring out, like, what worked for me? What didn't work for me? What was my part in the relationship? What am I looking more for now in my next relationship? And so just go easy on yourself. Take your time. You don't have to pressure yourself to go out there and start dating right now. But you're right where you need to be, Chris. Thank you for your email and for listening to the show. Thank you, everybody. And thank you, Tal, for being here.
Thank you, Emily.
This was so fun. So check out his movie, monogamishmovie.com. I think it's really going to inspire you. It's very thought-provoking and very well done. Congratulations. Thank you to everybody for listening. Thank you to my incredible team, Ken, Jamie, intern Shannon, producer Lark, and Michael. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.